This is Paul Inger of PainScience.com, and this is the PainSci Updates podcast, which is a private podcast, not found in any podcast directory. You cannot rate it on iTunes. It is 100% a podcast in nature, though. It's an RSS feed with audio attachments that you can listen to on demand in a podcast player, which you may or may not be doing right now. Some people just listen to the file on my website. It's just for members, so welcome. And have I mentioned lately how this content simply wouldn't exist without you? This is a good season for gratitude and review, so I will say thank you, and my wife says thank you, and the salamander says thank you. Not only did members get us through this year, 2024 was the first year that membership paid most of the bills, which overtook book sales for the first time. Which isn't saying much, because book sales are down about 80% from what they were for many years. And that's entirely or mostly about the way that the open internet is slowly dying. You may have heard rumors about the internet dying. I'm here to tell you it is. There are several serious technological diseases eroding the internet, technological and economic forces. But it's mostly just because Google simply stopped being a major source of traffic over the last few years. There are extremely few independent publishers that can make a go of it anymore. PainScience.com had about 1 million visitors per month from 2012 to 2020, and that is down to just 50,000. These days, which is still a respectable number, you know, like that's way, way more than I get for my, you know, largely defunct little personal blog. But it's not the powerhouse that it once was. And I relied on high traffic to sell enough books to make a living all those years. The website exists and is, you know, large and has been a project for a long, long time because I sold a lot of books for a long, long time. That was how it was possible. It was how it was possible to do it without advertising, which, you know, was unheard of from the very earliest days. I mean, it was almost as soon as blogging was established, the only way that most people could make money at it was by selling ads. And from the beginning, I didn't do that. I just sold books. But then it died. The book sales didn't die off in proportion to the traffic, fortunately, or I really absolutely would have gone out of business. It would have been too disastrous too quickly. But for about every 10% of lost traffic, I lost about 5% of my book sales. So it was, you know, roughly, you know, in terms of book sales, the damage was only half as bad as the lost traffic. But it was still a business disaster, and PainScience.com absolutely would have died by about the middle of 2022 if it were not for members like you. I read the writing on the wall, and I started the membership program in mid-2021, so it is what we did, 22, 23, 24, we've done about 3.5 years now, and this was the first year that it paid most of the bills. So thank you. My genuine appreciation. This project would have ended. I'm not very comfortable with making a living this way. I don't really like selling memberships. I don't like the feeling of waking up every day and knowing that I have got to provide to you because you have already paid for good content. It's a lot of pressure compared to the book writing and selling business. It's way more hectic. But it's better than being out of business. So I soldier on, and with gratitude for your support. Okay, let's get on with today's content. This post is called "Contradictory New Data on Nitroglycerin for Tendinitis." So nitroglycerin has a colorful history, from powering dynamite to treating cocaine side effects, angina, and anal fissures. Most people don't even know that it has medical uses other than heart pain, but it does, and one of them is treating anal fissures for some reason. In biology, nitroglycerin is quickly converted to nitric oxide, or NO, which is not to be confused with nitrous oxide, the laughing gas, which is N2O. The NO is the actual active ingredient in nitroglycerin, and it is a active ingredient because it is a powerful vasodilator. Maybe anti-inflammatory, maybe analgesic, and most importantly here, maybe NO is a tendon builder, yet another thing that supposedly stimulates cells to do something clinically useful for us. So maybe nitro is good tendonitis medicine. We've needed some superior science on this for ages, and we finally just got some from Kirwan et al. A very nicely controlled test of nitrogen ointment. That's a typo. It's not nitrogen. It's not nitrogen ointment. It's nitroglycerin ointment. It is amazing. I have reviewed that paragraph quite a few times without noticing that. But nature of typos, they hide in plain sight. Right, where was I? So, nicely controlled test of nitroglycerin ointment done the way most of us would do it. We smear some on daily for a while. So what have we learned from their sciencing? Kirwan et al. Tested topical nitro in a few dozen Irish folks at a Dublin hospital. They compared it to an aqueous cream, which, quote, contained no ingredients that would aid in tendon recovery. So it's basically, you know, water ointment. And amusingly, you can actually easily find examples of cranks making the oversimplified claim that tendons need to be hydrated and would probably benefit from an aqueous cream. That is, of course, ridiculous. Tendons don't need to be hydrated or can't be hydrated by moistening them externally. Everyone also did the same exercise program for 6 months. All the subjects did an exercise program. And predictably, it was the Alfredson protocol, which is, you know, basically a bunch of calf exercise made fiddly by doing them the eccentric way, or loaded elongation, tension on the muscle, contracting while it lengthens. In practice, what this basically means is heel drops, not heel lifts, just the drops, because that's the phase of contraction when the muscle is lengthening, but also contracting to control the speed of the descent. Heel drops, the Alfredson protocol, has become rather popular in the last, 20 years or something. It is known that the Alfredson protocol is no better than simpler weightlifting. That was quite well established by a study in 2015. And the authors here, Kirwan et al., referenced that study from 2015, explaining that it was published after this trial was designed, meaning they didn't know that the Alfredson protocol was no better than any other kind of weightlifting until after they'd already designed their study and gotten going on it. Which also means apparently this trial took at least a decade to pull off. Wow. Good science takes time to prepare. So all that exercise plus time means that everybody in this study was likely to get better. And they did. Right? That's how it goes. Everybody always gets better. Almost no matter what it is, most people slowly get better. And they did. The point, of course, is did the nitro-smeared heels heal faster? And the answer was no difference, an utterly negative result on its face. Nitro conveyed no advantage whatsoever. It did convey some headaches, though, which is a well-known side effect. And this is also, by the way, because it works by vasodilating, and migraines are basically about vasodilation, this is also a potent migraine trigger in people with that vulnerability. And interestingly, it will cause headaches even in people without that vulnerability, though not everyone and not necessarily very strong. So that is a side effect to be well aware of here. As long as it doesn't trigger migraines, not that big a deal. Like, I would tolerate a few headaches if it helped my tendons. Okay, a weird diversion now. I had a bunch of fun diving down this weird rabbit hole. I found an image that I wanted to use for the post. It was kind of perfect. It's an antique bottle of nitroglycerin with a kind of a funny label. And I really wanted to use it. But as I started looking at it, the longer I looked at it, the more I thought, where does this come from? And, you know, and do I have the right to use it? And the answer, of course, is probably no, because in general, if you didn't create an image yourself or buy it, you probably don't have the right to use it. Unless it's public domain. And maybe the fact that it was, you know, a picture of an antique, you know, made my brain think, oh, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's in the public domain because it's super old. But no, it's a new photograph. The bottle, you can't see this in the post because I didn't publish it. So I will describe it. It's a bottle with the prominent label Nitro, 100% nitroglycerin, and danger, drop it and die. Very dramatic. So this is a for sale replica of a bottle of nitroglycerin by International Military Antiques with labels that are allegedly an accurate period reproduction. But no, it is probably an imitation of a whimsical prop made by Adam Savage for Savage Builds, which was his post-Mythbusters YouTube show. The more you read of the label, the more obvious this gets. Like the particularly silly final line says, not for use in blowing safe deposit boxes or postal train car doors. The creative concept here has got Adam Savage written all over it. Drop It and Die is almost certainly his. And IMA imitated it for their inventory of antiques. Adam's original prop was obviously riffing on Hollywood's ancient hair trigger explosives trope. You can see the bottle, this picture and other versions, in a blog post, for instance, by someone who made one just for fun, made it a replica of Adam's replica. There's also a Reddit post where some folks discuss the implausibility of the label text, trying to figure out if it's a real antique, but they don't make the Savage connection at all. So I spent a happy couple of hours digging into this and trying to figure out where this image had come from. The entire time, I knew that it was probably a ridiculous thing to be doing because I wasn't going to use an image I didn't obviously have the right to use. But I just couldn't resist the little puzzle of trying to figure out its origin story. So it's that time has now been somewhat saved by sharing the story of it with you here, even though I couldn't publish the picture of the bottle. Okay, back to nitroglycerin for tendonitis now. So this negative study, this is why one study is never enough. This new result is the opposite of another quite old result from a similar 2004 trial, which was also fairly rigorous. So to be clear, in 2004, Paoloni et al. Conducted a good quality trial with a strongly positive result. And in 2024, Kerwan et al. Conducted a good quality trial with a strongly negative result. So what gives? This is an unusual contrast, right? Usually, these negative results, like the new paper here, are contradicting a long history of promising results from shitty trials. But and there is that too, right? There's that we also have those. But what stands out here is that this 20-year-old study was actually a good study with a positive result. We don't usually see that mashup. Time and time again in my business, I'm looking at, you know, finally someone has published a good quality trial and it is negative and it outranks all the other kind of sort of barely positive evidence that came before it from junky little trials. This is quite an interesting contrast in that you've got this old one that's really quite decent and positive. So what do we make of that? What gives? Well, Kerwan et al. Speculate that it could be chalked up to either their different outcome measures and or dosage. Paoloni et al. Used more nitro. They used it from a patch, which gives more nitro because it's continuous delivery, right? You don't have to keep reapplying the ointment. It just keeps on soaking in. And they reported both more benefit and more harm, more tendonitis relief and more headache grief. This could be a tidy example of how a relatively small detail might make all the difference and explain how two good quality trials can produce completely different results. Basically, you can consider these trials extremely similar, but the one kind of obvious difference is dosing. And one of them was much higher and seemed to work much better. So what that means is that the conclusion of the new study is less pessimistic than its results. Its results are very pessimistic. Its results are just unambiguously negative. Quote, our results do not support the use of topical GTN ointment in treating Achilles tendinopathy. No, indeed, they do not. These results do not. It's very hard to look at these results, read the study, understand the nature of the test, and feel good about Nitro. I mean, it really clearly didn't work in this trial. Despite using ointment instead of patches, they had reasons to think that it was enough dosage. Ointment, quote, has been shown to be as effective as patches, and they based that on a study of anal fissures. But butts probably don't heal the same as heels, so that's hardly conclusive, as they acknowledge. Basically, you know, their final speculation is, yeah, maybe it wasn't enough. Maybe the ointment is not as effective as patches after all. They thought it would be, or they hoped it would be, but maybe not. And so, on the other hand, maybe this new trial was negative just because the ointment did not deliver enough Nitro. Nitro actually works. They write, in light of our incomplete understanding of tendon pathophysiology, the study of GTN is warranted as basic science. Animal and human studies have confirmed NO as an important chemical messengers in tendon pathology and repair. Yeah, maybe so, maybe not. In the last post, I talked a lot about how basic science studying biological effects is pretty much meaningless if you don't have good quality clinical trials confirming that it actually does something. But in this case, we do have at least one of those in addition to the junky ones. So if the only two good trials were both negative, I would say case probably closed. But as it is, I think it would be a mistake for a careless skeptic to point to this paper and scoff at Nitro for tendons. I think this is an unusually legit example of more study needed. But despite the possibility that more nitrogen is actually efficacious, this has been another mostly bad news post. All kinds of science-based pessimism, just like almost everything I've had to say about shockwave therapy recently, as you pay for this service. But the only thing worse than pain alone is pain with false hope and bullshit, and so we continue to explore the science of pain and rehab treatments, even though it is mostly pretty disappointing stuff. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays, and talk to you next time.